Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Ethics Talk. This talk is being broadcasted from two places abroad, and so we do apologize if there are choppy bits to it. My name is Hope May, and I'm speaking to you from The Hague, Netherlands. Joining me eventually will be, hopefully and ideally, five different students who will be calling in, I should say Skyping in, from Leiden, Netherlands, which is nearby. We are all here in the Netherlands as a group doing a class called Human Rights Theory and Practice, an in-depth look at the International Criminal Court, also known as the ICC. So, if you don't know about the International Criminal Court, we have done several shows on it, so I encourage you to check our archives at ethicstalk.cmich, that's C-M-I-C-H, .edu. I also encourage you to follow our blog online, which is at romestatute.com. And this is our online blog, which we have been working on since we were in the States, which was several weeks ago. It was a week ago yesterday that the students, most of them, except one, saw the International Criminal Court. I do believe that all the students are online, and so I'm just going to go down the line here that's in front of me and ask you to say hello. And so first, Jeff, right there.
Hello.
Yep, I'm hearing you. And there's definitely an echo, so somebody needs to shut down a browser or something like this. Sarah, are you there?
Yep.
Great. And Erica?
Yes.
Okay. And Sean?
Hi.
Hello. You're coming in a little bit, anyway, robotic thing to your voice. And Jack?
Here. How are you doing?
Okay, good. We're all here. Miraculous. And so with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Jeff.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. First and foremost, I'm Jeff. I'm one of the six students, including Hope. And to start the show off light, we have a kind of a funny story, I believe 2 days ago, coming home from Amsterdam. And I'm going to turn the floor to Sarah to tell you guys that story.
Hey. We figured we'd start with an anecdote just to kind of lighten the mood a little bit before we get all deep. Yeah. as Jess said, we went to Amsterdam to walk around and kind of see the city for which the Netherlands is truly, I guess, famous. I don't know how else to put that, but most well known, I guess. So we walked around for, I think Jeff and I calculated, we walked around about 10 miles, I think, we walked. It was a good 5 hours of walking, and I had blisters on my feet. Everybody was really tired and just really looking forward to the bus ride home. So we got on the train, went back to the station, and we were standing kind of in front of the buses, and Erica decides that she's going to jump on the back of Danny's bike, and they're going to bike their way to the dorms. So we said, okay, well, we'll just take the bus and meet you guys there. And conveniently enough, there was our bus. It was the correct bus number. So we said, oh, hey, let's jump on this. So we jumped on it, and we are sitting down, getting nice and relaxed, waiting for our stop. But after a few minutes, we started realizing that the street name becoming less and less familiar, and we are kind of looking at each other, not really saying anything, but noticing that we are becoming the last people on the bus. So at the end of the bus tour, I guess, the driver stops the bus, and I'm going to toss this over to Jack because I cannot do the impression the way that he does it. He does true justice to it. Go for it, Jack.
Okay. Well, so we were sitting at the very end of the bus line, and the lady turns around, and she just she kind of let out an animated laugh that was just kind of like it was borderline absurd. Like, I've never heard of anyone laugh like that in my entire life. And then we were just sitting there just kind of waiting for something to happen, and she turns around and she says, "The problem is that I am finished." And I was like, "Well, I'm not quite positive what you mean. Like, we take this bus every day, and apparently the bus, you know, it has different routes for different times and things like that." So, she goes, "Well, the problem is that I am finished, but she goes, "So you guys are going to have to walk home." And we're like, "Oh man!" And we all start getting up, and she goes, "Oh no, it's okay. I was just kidding." And then she took us all, and then she drove us back to the bus station, which was an act of kindness, because apparently that's frowned upon, or maybe it's against some kind of code or whatever like that. But yeah, she showed us some real kindness, and it was actually a really funny story. The way she brought up the fact that we had taken the wrong bus was pretty entertaining. So yeah, that's the story.
Yeah, she was definitely I think she was very, very amused, because we were obviously American. We obviously didn't know what the hell we were doing on that bus. But,
yeah.
You know, it was the right bus number, just not the right direction.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a really, really funny moment. Anyway, so now that we got that story out of the way, we're going to dive right into it. And we're going to shoot this question over to Jack. Basically, we're just going to discuss the structural dimensions of the court, like how it's all laid out, the building, etc. So, Jack, do you want to take that one?
Absolutely. So, the other day, we went on a tour of the ICC, and first things first, when you walk up to it, it's a big building, and it definitely looks like it's got some level of importance. But when you look at it and from the exterior, you really wouldn't know what it was. But when you go up close, you figure it out, because there's barbed wire fences and things like that. But we hear around that people in the Netherlands don't even know that the ICC is actually in the Netherlands. People don't understand that it's located there. And you know, I can kind of get it, because when you look at it, it does look like a large building, but you wouldn't really be able to tell right off the bat. And then further to go more into that, once we got in and we were taking our tour, one of the our tour guide, who was a very nice woman, told us that the ICC actually currently is positioned in what used to be a parking garage. And so you have the world's most I guess one of the world's most important courts, or just criminal justice systems, in, you know, trying some of the most heinous crimes known to man, and it's located in a parking garage. So I mean, there's some serious irony there at the way that this thing is set out. But I mean, obviously, I think it's very telling that the ICC, international law itself, is such a new idea. It was birthed about a decade ago, maybe. When you started the ICTY and the writing of the Rome Statute and things like that. But really, it's very young as far as, you know, an institution goes. It's very telling that it's actually in a parking garage. And then another thing that we noticed is that we also went to on a tour of the STL, which is the Special Tribunal of Lebanon, which is another international court. And in the STL, the security to get into the building was very, very, I guess, and just intense would be the word. You know, there's an outpost that you have to go through, and when you're at that outpost, you have to get your passport checked. They have to make sure that's you. Then you give them your passport. Then you walk through a metal detector. Then they take you around to another place where you go up and you lock things in a locker. You can tell they definitely weren't kidding around. They had obviously had a very capable security force, I guess. But then when we went to the ICC, security was not nearly as intense. I mean, that building had barbed wire fences around it at certain points, and I think that was just a thing. But the ICC was, I mean, obviously you're gonna have to get security checked, but at the end of the day, it wasn't a total hassle to get into the building. And I think that's telling that what that says is the ICC, you know, it doesn't have a single government representing it. It's an international institution, so it has no governmental body, and it's just kind of a group of nations, not just one. Whereas the STL is representing the nation of Lebanon. So if anything happens in the STL, that it's basically happening in Lebanon, but it's basically, you know, it's being represented there. And also the STL is trying terrorism crimes, so therefore they need to be extra careful at who they let into the building and who they don't, because, I mean, obviously terrorism is a huge problem and you don't know when you're going to get attacked, so you have to take the extra precautions. But it was very odd to me to see that the ICC, which is once again this mammoth international justice system, which is supposed to be the court of courts and its in security system, was very good, but it, I mean, obviously, you can just tell that it was lacking funding. There wasn't enough. There should have been more for the amount of importance that this thing is. Obviously, it's not the ICC's fault. They're in a temporary location. The garage that they're located in is a temporary location, and they're building a new facility that are supposed to be done in 2015, and they're immense, and as far as the design goes, from what I can see, that they look very, very good. But I think the difference between the STL and the ICC was telling to see how much more interest the government of Lebanon had in the security of the thing. And also another thing to notice, and probably the last point I'll make, is the courtroom inside the ICC and the STL were both very, very state of the art. You know, these courts, especially the ICC, and to focus on the ICC, they spared no expense as far as transparency goes in the courtroom, because, I mean, obviously with dealing with international crime and international law, there are going to be a lot of people speaking a lot of different languages coming through the court, you know, a lot of different dialects going through. And to minimize that, there are screens at every single location throughout the entire courtroom. And then you look at it, and all of these things are getting translated. Everything that's spoken is getting translated to either French or English. And it comes up on these teleprompter screens. So, if a witness is to say something, it would get said, and then there would be a 5 second or 10 second grace period where these things are getting typed out by a translator. But then they would come up, and also you're wearing headphones where it's getting verbally translated to you also. So that, I mean, to say that you don't understand a person based on language just simply can't happen in the ICC. They are very thorough in their effort to make sure that everything is transparent and all the facts are known. And also the equipment for witnesses, describing scenes and things like that. They have touch screens to be able to point to where they were on specific maps and things like that. So the courtrooms in themselves are incredibly, incredibly technologically advanced. And it's obvious that there's no expense as far as their budget goes to make sure what they gave. As far as the structural dimensions go, that's pretty much all I can cover. Back to you, Jeff. Anything else?
Can I, Matt, may I just add something really quickly?
Of course.
I just want to say, like, the ICC is not in the parking garage. It's just a public area. That's the parking garage aspect. And so, like the whole couch that we saw, that was actually a former telephone company. So it's just the public area that's
a parking garage
of what I believe is KPN telephone company. I believe that's who used to inhabit that building.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Definitely what I noticed was that, like Jack touched on, the protection of the witnesses is a huge, huge, huge undertaking. They do everything that they can, whether they're blurring the faces or just putting the voice at the request of the witness. Yeah, that was totally huge. But we're going to send it to Erica, and I think she's going to discuss similar to how the ICC was in the old KPN building. She's going to touch on the STL and the building that it is currently housed in.
Okay, thank you. As Jack just told everyone, the portions of the ICC, the public gallery area, is actually located in the parking lot of a building that used to be owned by a telephone company, and it's interesting that the building for the Special Tribunal of Lebanon is located in the courtroom is actually what used to be an old basketball court. So it's just interesting how both of these courts have found a home in the most unlikely of places. And I think it's, as Jack mentioned how the ICC does have a limited budget. When we were there for our tour, I had the opportunity to ask one of our speakers how much budget for the ICC actually was, and the answer was around $100 million, dollars, I believe, not euros. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But for an institution this size, it's surprising that that's all there is, and the work continues to grow. I asked them, you know, have you felt limited or hindered in any way? And they said, at this point, no. In the future, if it will come to whether they're able to take on other cases or not, if they just have the money. And so I said that at this point, the institution doesn't have more, but everyone that works there really has the willpower to do everything they can with what they have. And I think it's really inspirational to see that the work that they're doing. And it's good to hear that they will be have a new building in 2015, I believe. So that's all I have. Back to you, Jeff.
All right, yeah, it is really cool to see how these courts take form and, you know, like Erica just said, find the unlikely of homes, but yet turn it into something beautiful that can handle the ICC and these terrible crimes. So now I think Sean's having some problems dropping, so we're just going to go ahead and skip right to Sarah, and she's going to close up this portion of the structural dimensions. So over to you, Sarah.
Can you cut out for a second for me? Could that please?
Just going to send it to you to wrap up this structural dimensions in the court portion of the show.
I mean, Jack pretty much said it all. something else that can be touched on is, as was said by Erica, there is a budget of $100 million. Dollars, I don't think it's euros. This $100 million, what people don't realize is even though it sounds like a whole lot of money, they have to realize they're trying to pay their staff, which is a staff of, I think, 1,500 people. They are constantly getting more witnesses, more case load, I guess. And that money has to go to paying the employees. It has to go to maintaining the security, finding the witnesses, and providing them with the facilities and the means to come to the court and speak their piece, basically. I mean, that money gets used pretty quickly, and that's why it's pretty important that the ICC get as many states on board with it, I guess. But, and then going back to the fact that the people in the Netherlands don't really even know about the ICC, I believe it was mentioned that in The Hague, it's just known as the White Building. People don't actually know what it means, or, what that building is or what it houses. That's pretty much all I had to.
Absolutely. And I think just to put your, $100 million in perspective, that someone at the court said that that's about one day spent in the war in Afghanistan. So one day in the war versus a whole year's budget. It's just to put that in perspective for everybody.
Mm-hmm. What we're the most concerned with right now, too, is what we spend money on.
Absolutely, good point. So now Jack mentioned the tour that we took, and I'm going to kind of tell you guys exactly what we did and how we felt during that. So first things first, it was a surreal moment we've only been studying this for a couple of weeks now, but very intensely. And it's safe to say that it's shaped every single one of our lives just in that short time period. So to learn everything about the court, well, not everything, but to learn a lot about the court and to see the theories behind it, and then to actually get there, it was a very emotional moment for all of us, just seeing the court and the day before, but then actually getting to go inside and see the people and to see Prosecutor Ocampo's picture up there. It was one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me, really. So we got there early in the morning, and there was a pretty good-sized group of students, and it was quite obvious that we were the only ones from America. And as soon as the tour started, in fact, that point was brought right to the table. Our tour guide, Ala, who is phenomenal and knows so much about the court, she pointed out right away to everybody, and of course we kind of got that those looks that we've been getting quite frequently over here. It was cool because it set up a situation in which we could kind of prove ourselves. But I'll get to that more in a few seconds. So our first speaker of the tour was actually Judge Call, which was freaking amazing, to put it bluntly. Most people don't get the chance to get a one-on-one with the judge, partly because of the nature of their job. They have to be so independent, and they don't really get – and they're so busy. So a lot of people who work with and around the court don't get the opportunity to talk to them. So it was really cool that we got that opportunity. It was really unique. So basically, Judge Call wrote two dissents regarding Kenya. One was whether or not there should be an investigation, and two of the three judges said yes, and he dissented and said no. And then a second dissent was actually if the pretrial chamber should issue a summons to appear. And if you don't know what exactly that is, basically there's two options that the court has to bring the accused into the court. There is a summons to appear, which is slightly less powerful, basically just asking the accused to come to the court willingly, voluntarily. They have the choice to turn that down. And then there's another option that is an arrest warrant, which basically if the ICC or one of the member states can get the accused, they will and bring it to the court. Well, not will. That's up to them too, but that's a whole other issue for another day. But so then Judge Call opened up the floor to some questions. And the very first question was posed by, I think, a German student who somewhere along the line said, if the American public is more educated on the ICC, would that put more pressure for the Americans to join? Which was funny because she was basically calling Americans uneducated, and while we were just three rows behind her. And a second question came out of them, which was directed to the ICTY, which is completely different than the ICC, which I found ironic that they would call us uneducated, yet within two questions show their ignorance of the situation. And this was put on this when Judge Call only limited it to two questions, but Hope shot her hand in the air and asked actually a very good question about the dissent. In which the Judge Call was very impressed and displayed his gratitude by saying, wow, someone's actually reading my dissents. And then Hope says, and I'm an American, which was an awesome moment because it showed that, you know, hey, we're Americans and we are educated, and obviously more so than some of the students in the group. So it was a really cool moment and a great way to start off the tour. But I don't want to drag on too much, but one thing kind of connected to that is I didn't really learn, at least during the presentations, of how the courts run and their subject matter jurisdiction and the things that they do. We didn't really learn anything new in terms of how it operates like that. But what we did learn about was how human rights takes shape and seeing human rights play out in person, which you cannot get from just a basic theoretical understanding. You know, our tour director, Ala, she knew, like, everything about the court, and she embodied the court, and it was so cool to see the passion and the enthusiasm that these people have. And I know we're going to touch more on that in the next portion of the show, but you know, it was so cool to see how much thought was put into even the smallest things, like just providing tissues for the witnesses, or, you know, just simple small things like that that didn't go overlooked. That was so refreshing to see, and honestly so inspiring. And I just can't wait to keep going on. And I know talking to the other students in our group, we all feel the same way. So now I'm going to send this question to Erica, and if she has anything to add, now's the time, Erica. Erica? Well, it seems like Erica's not responding, so...
Can you hear me?
There you are.
Okay. perfect. All right. Well, the thing that I want to talk about that struck me when we were touring ICC was the level of care that the employees there and the court itself took to protect the witnesses and victims that come into the court really to help in these cases. And so it was interesting to learn that they use a 3-hour delay when they live, so that in case something is said by the prosecution or the defense, the judges, the witness, that could be dangerous to the witnesses themselves, their families. But there is time to correct this mistake and eliminate it from the feed so that the information is not made available to the public, because the ALA, our tour guide, emphasized to us that there are people listening to these live streams and also do come in the trial proceedings at the court. And they use this information and take it back to the rebel groups, and they use it against those who testify at the court. And so it made it very real, and it's actually scary when you think about it. But it's interesting that they do it like that, and I think it's really good that they take as many precautions as they can. They take it very seriously. But it is still interesting that anybody can come in and view these trial proceedings. It isn't exactly that room for error. If something is said, they'll quickly go into closed session, but there's not quite as much that they can do. So I just found it all really interesting. And another thing that I found interesting was just the courtroom, how small it is. I thought it would be a little bigger than it was, but it's actually quite small. So that's all that I have. Back to you.
Yeah, definitely. I think Ala brought up the protection of witnesses for about 35% of the tour, so it was definitely a point that they drove home. Sean, do you have any elaborations on the subject?
Well, Jack kind of talked about this before, but one thing that I found just completely mind-blowing and just very different from any other court that I've ever seen is the fact that it is a very, very technologically advanced court. The courtrooms, there's literally computers everywhere, so that, you know, everything is digitized, and so, I mean, having people who, you know, come in and speak potentially, you know, hundreds of different languages, you have to have sort of a way to make that understandable and relatable to everybody in the room. And that's kind of what it does. And our tour guide, Ala, referred to it as an e-court, which is very interesting. We should, I mean, in my opinion, that it's a great idea. I should totally. It streamlines proceedings a lot, which, I mean, as much as you can with an international like that. But it's the same thing with, you know, I mean, it would be interesting to see that sort of thing kind of, like, put into, you know, like, to see it in, like, a U.S. court or a national court of law, and to see how much smoother things would go.
Yeah, totally. Something else that I took from that was that the witnesses, most likely, this would be the first time that they've seen a computer or any of this technology. At one point, Ala asked us to raise our hands if we knew how to start a computer, and everybody knew. And she said that quite frequently these people come in and the witnesses who want to get the justice out there and the right story out there have never seen a computer. So they have to take extreme, extreme amounts of care to, first of all, get these people acclimated, get them the food that they would normally eat, get them clothes, explain to them everything, introduce them to this technology. So that facet is just huge and wildly entertaining and, you know, very, very interesting. So now we're going to send it to Sarah and see if she has anything to add.
Hey, I don't know. As far as the whole translating process, I think it's really interesting. They take the time to find somebody who speaks that dialect, and the problem with that sometimes is that those people who do speak the dialects, who can translate, have also been in these situations themselves. In fact, they're probably a witness or a victim of the crimes that they are translating for, like the cases that they're translating for. So that's also something to take into consideration. And we did, while we were there, I think one of the translators actually gave some input at one point, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, so it was like the translators are, they are often very much related to these crimes and these cases. But also with all the translating going on, you really get a feel for how slow the court process is, which I am always amazed at every time. Well, I guess not amazed at, but it's always interesting to see when you actually go there is how long it takes just to question one victim or one witness or pose one question. It has to be translated. The witness sometimes has a question in return that has to be translated. So asking one question can take as like up to 15 minutes, maybe even a half hour. So I found that, I always find that really
interesting. Yeah, totally, because a lot of people may look at the long process of the court. Like, for instance, the very first case that's been brought before the ICC has yet to wrap up. But as Sarah just pointed out, this isn't necessarily inefficiency. It's just the nature of the trial and the trial proceedings. It takes so, so long. Like Sarah said, one of the questions that we saw asked was, do you know the difference between a helicopter and an airplane? And it took at least 5 minutes to get that answer out. So just for something that simple, 5 minutes. And then, of course, the witnesses may get headaches and stuff like this. So they have to, you know, tailor the court to their needs. So to wrap up this section, we're going to shoot the question over to Jack. So you're up, Jack.
Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of it was covered, but for me, I think but the thing that was most telling about the tour itself, I mean, obviously we learned a lot about the court, and we saw that we just got a firsthand account of all the things that we've been learning about. But for me, the number one thing was just the atmosphere, the vibe that we got from the other European people on the tour. It's really trying to show what the feeling is towards Americans from Europe, especially on the topic of international law, because, I mean, being on the Security Council or the United States Security Council, I mean, the United States is not really involved a lot with the International Criminal Court, but we do when it comes to referrals. I mean, UN Security Council is the people who they who makes that decision. And the fact that the United States can make the decision while not taking part in the court is just an inconsistency that, you know, it was very obvious to me that through just by looking at the other students and the thing that they were not very happy that there were Americans there. You know, I'm not sure if it wasn't happy that they were there, but they noticed for sure, and it wasn't something that was lost on them. And it like, just when you hear about stuff like that, when you like stereotypes and things like that, you know, a lot of times you put them into like this category of like, you know, it's there, but you know, it's not really like you can't really, no one's ever going to say anything to me or anything like that. Like, someone will think about it, but it was obvious that they noticed that we were there. And it was obvious that they had ill feelings towards us because we were Americans, and Americans have not joined the ICC. I mean, it was it was relatively obvious. And, you know, at that point, it passed beyond the point of theory, where it was just people in Europe are angry with America for not joining the United States. And actually, you could see it in practice. The feeling that was, they're just not very happy at all. It was a lot of diffidence within the tour group, I guess. So it was, that's the thing that really mainly stuck out to me as far as the tour goes. Jeff?
Actually, I think Jeff has been dropped.
Okay.
So I'll just wait for him to call back in.
Okay.
So yeah. Do you guys echo Jack's sentiment about you felt a little bit of hostility coming from the other people in the tour?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's a good word for it.
So while we wait for Jeff to come back on. Oh, wait, I think he's here. And I definitely hear an echo, so where that coming from. Jeff, maybe it's you who are the source of the echo.
Possibly.
I just want to say something real quick. I don't think it was necessary hostility. Maybe just... sorry, the echo is throwing me off, and I'm trying to find the right word. Crap, what's that? Never mind, I gotta figure out this.
All right, Jeff, are you there?
Yes. Should we move on then?
Next section.
They were being super silly. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, go on.
All right. So now we kind of touched on it earlier. The focus of the employee and the deep respect. So we're going to let Erica talk about that and talk about the employees and their demeanor in the court.
All right. Thank you. So as Jeff mentioned, there was a lot of respect shown by the employees of the ICC towards each other and towards visitors and towards the victims and witnesses and everyone that's involved with this court. And this deep respect focus is shown in the way even that they addressed each other within the courtroom. Everyone was given like a honorable title and shown respect, listened to carefully, thanked for their comments. It was all very conscious of each other and what everyone had to say. And I think that this is not only because these people represent the court, but they are the court, and it is part of who they are. They believe what they're doing. They believe in this work, and they want to make a difference. People don't find these type of careers by accident. It's within them and to do so, and they love what they do. And so I feel like that's why it's so easy for them to show this kindness and respect towards one another. And it's something that if everyone was able to do this, I feel like our world would be a lot better place. But it's such a beautiful thing to see in an institution like this where everyone is able to show respect to each other even with our differences. And so, yeah, just like... summarize that, they just live the message that they try to send to the world, and they respect humanity, which is reflected in how they work at the court and with others. So that's all.
Well said. Sean, do you have anything to add?
Basically, I just... the employees, geez, what can you say? They literally are the court. The court would be nothing without the people who run. They are extremely passionate about what they do. I do believe it was Prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo who said that the ICC is a court for the dreamers. And what he meant by that was that we kind of envision a society, like a global society, that is just and without crimes that occur like the ones that the ICC prosecutes. And that's the mindset of everyone who works at the court. They truly believe, you know, the ICC will end impunity and it will eventually put a stop to crimes like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, do you have anything?
I definitely have to say every time I've gone there, especially I know you guys haven't met her yet, but after I met with Antonia and some of the other representatives from the ICC last time, you can definitely feel their passion. This is what they're about, and this is what they do. I mean, they take it very, very seriously, but it's their life to them. And I'm really excited for you guys to meet other people, because then you get even an even better sense. I mean, it was one thing talking to the judge, and it's one thing talking to Allah, but it's something completely different when you talk to somebody like, what is her name? Hope?
Irene.
Thank you. Who is on the ground. She's an investigator, and she is in the thick of it, as you know, you can understand. But yeah, it's those people that are really, really passionate about what they do. So I think that's all I have to say.
Awesome. Good points. Jack, you're up.
All right. Well, I think that a lot has been touched on, but I would like to emphasize the point that, you know, it's something that we talked about a lot in class before we left for Europe, and it's that in order to undertake something like this, in order to go after such a lofty goal as to end impunity in the world, the kind of commitment that the workers at the ICC show is what's required. You can't do something like this. You can't be committed to a goal like this without literally selling out entirely. You need to be completely and utterly focused in order to achieve this goal, because I mean, it just takes so much. It's around the clock kind of job. You know, the amount of work that it takes simply to get a person into just to get a person to trial.
Absolutely, and
that it's taken them several years to catch in the first place, and then they. am I good?
You've been cutting out, but I think
yeah.
We got most of your message.
Okay. So we've had a pause for thought.
I guess I'll just move on then. I can hear myself delaying, but I think that the biggest thing for the people at the ICC is that they must show that kind of focus. If they do not do that, if everyone from Prosecutor Ocampo down to the lowest person on the phone pole does not show that kind of commitment, then this thing really can't exist. It's required. So that's pretty much the point I would like to make, I guess.
It's a good point to make. And just to wrap this section up, I think that this respect and focus plays out in every single aspect. For example, when the counsel or the defense and the prosecution are going back and forth, they respectfully object. They call each other my friend or my colleague or something along those lines that really just shows the respect, and it's in every single facet, as I think we've touched on. So now for the final part of our show, we're just going to give any final thoughts, and at this time I'm going to give the floor to Hope so she can get her two cents in.
Wow, I mean, there's 16 minutes remaining, so I would rather just it go to somebody else. I yield my time to the other members of the committee.
All right. Well, in that case, Sean, you are up first for any of your final thoughts.
Well, I mean, geez, final thoughts. That's a big one, I guess. As far as the last week has gone, it's just it's so surreal actually being here and being, I guess we've been referred to as the Trailblazers being the first group of undergrads that actually, you know, has come in and done an in-depth study of the ICC. Basically, I guess I feel like, you know, that's a huge thing that's kind of on our shoulders, but it's working, you know, it's going well. And just the first week alone, we've learned an incredible amount. And just actually, it's so much different about it, just like hearing, like being in the States and hearing it, you know, hearing about what the ICC does or seeing it on the news or reading about it in newspapers, and then actually being here and seeing what happens, like day-to-day operations, you know, what happens, the who, what, and when, and how behind it.
Absolutely. Sarah, you're up next if you want to interject any of your final thoughts.
Final thoughts would probably have to be, we've done a lot so far, and we have so much more that we need to do. It's really, really daunting, but at the same time, it's really, really exciting. I know all of us have been really, really excited to do exactly what we're doing and to see even more than what we've already seen, which, I mean, we've already seen quite a bit of the course and everything. We've been to the FDL, we've been to the ICC, we've been to the CICC, we've spoken with people, Joe Powderly. I mean, we've done so much, but there's still so much more to do, and I really look forward to seeing what we all as a group can achieve, what we all as individuals can achieve. So I guess those are my final thoughts. I'm going to leave it there because that sounded good.
Very good. Jack, what about you?
The final thoughts that I would give are that, you know, it's just the being in Europe in itself is very, 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 it's an eye-opening experience. And then to see all the, obviously going to the International Criminal Court and going to the STL and things like that and talking to scholars and, you know, learned people and like-minded people is obviously all good. But just being in a place that I've never been, seeing people that I've never seen, doing things that I've never done, to me is just, it's something that I'm never going to forget. So I'm going to hold on to this for a while. It's definitely shaping the person that I am. And, everything that's going on, and I'm very glad that we made this trip and that everything's working out well so far. So those are my final thoughts.
Good final thoughts. All right, Erica, do you have any thoughts?
For me, the most special part of this trip has just been seeing everything. Even more so than that, the people. Our group is really great, and I love all of you guys. I've learned so much, including hope. It's really great. Bring together, and we'll be bonded for life through this experience. Even outside of our small circle, the friends that we've made in the dorm that we live in, and being able to discuss with them different parts of the world has been really interesting and enriching, I think, for all of our lives. So shout out to them if any of them listen. And then even besides that, just the people in the Netherlands. This course is about human rights theory and practice, and in order for any of that, and I think that just this experience has just showed, like, we're all different in a lot of ways, but we're all really similar, and we all have this goodness inside us. And it's wonderful to get to share that and experience it with each other. So that's been my favorite part of this trip.
We love you, too.
So, yeah, I guess I'll just wrap up this last part of the show. Kind of what everybody else talked about, it's so cool to be at this infancy stage of the court. Like I said earlier, the first case hasn't even come to a close yet, and we are here in it talking to these people, doing our part and learning. And, you know, in 50 years, when we're older and gray and we have our grandkids to talk to, we're going to be like, hey, we were there. And now this ICC has taken a life of its own, and now it's doing this, and the other. And hey, we were there, man. It's documented. Like, that is just going to be so awesome. And I mean, kind of along the same lines, just the beauty of this, of Leiden, of Amsterdam, of The Hague, of the people, it's so refreshing and so awesome to just be a part of it and see a whole another side of the world and see that, you know what, there are people out there dedicating their lives for the sake of humanity, and it's awesome just to be along for the ride, really. And lastly, I just want to speak for the group here and thank Hope for her inspiration and the things that the tools she has equipped us with. And we are along for the ride with her, and she's learning. She's a student alongside of us, but without her, none of this would be possible. So just want to send that out there and thank you, Hope, and thank everybody in the group for, you know, giving it our all and being in this together. So with that, I'm going to send the floor to Hope.
Right. So thank you for that. And as I've said, I'm your humble servant. And it's not just me. You know, I was affected by other people. It's a whole network of energy that we're a part of, which I think is, you know, positive energy. I think we're on the good side. But I just want to say, again, to remind the listeners of our blog, RomeStatute.com, and we post on that regularly, and we've been posting on it since the very beginning. You can see us on day one when we all met in the classroom at Central Michigan University. And I feel that I have grown so much, and I know that you all feel the same way. I mentioned in one of the blogs a line from one of the Lord of the Rings, I think it's either the second or the third one, where Samwise and Frodo have been through this tremendous trek of throwing the Ring of Power back to its origins to destroy it. And Samwise says, it's all wrong. We shouldn't be here, but we are. And I feel that's completely true. And so we are here, and I wanted to just say, you know, this is a transgenerational project. This project of the court, you know, Jeff, you said talk to your grandchildren. If you understand the history of the really only, in my view, analogous situation, which is, you know, talking about universal norms and, you know, humanity saying, you know what, there are just certain things that cannot happen. If you look at the history of taking that seriously through the rule of law, that is not a cakewalk. It takes pain, it takes failure, it takes toil, and it takes the work of more than one generation. And so there will be people who come after you who continue the great work, and I want you to think of them. And I'm going to close with a clip. The clip is not from Walk the Line, but from a clip that we watched actually in Mount Pleasant in a classroom. And perhaps the clip, I'm actually playing a little bit of a different part of it, a part that we did not watch in class. And I'm just going to close the show when that clip ends. And the clip is from V for Vendetta, and it is about 3 minutes long. And here comes the clip.
I shall die here. Every inch of me shall perish. Every inch but one. An inch. It is small, and it is fragile, and it is the only thing in the world worth having. We must never lose it or give it away. We must never let them take it from us. I hope that whoever you are, you escape this place. I hope that the world turns and that things get better. But what I hope most of all is that you understand what I mean when I tell you that even though I do not know you, and even though I may never meet you, laugh with you, cry with you, or kiss you, I love you. With all my heart, I love you. Valerie.
I'm instructed to inform you that you have been convicted by special tribunal, and that unless you are ready to offer your cooperation, you are to be executed. Do you understand what I'm telling you?
Yes.
Are you ready to cooperate?
No.
Very well. Escort Miss Hammond back to her cell. Arrange a detail of 6 men and take her out behind the chemical shed and shoot her.
It's time.
I'm ready.
Look, all they want is one little piece of information. Just give them something, anything.
Thank you. But I'd rather die behind the chemical sheds.
Then you have no fear anymore. You're completely free.
Right, so with that, I'm going to end the show. And if you have paid attention to the show, then please look at Article 26 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Good evening. Thank you for being with us, and we will be back. Thank you, guys, and have a great evening listening to Ethics Talk.